You're listening to the Profit Connections Podcast. Entrepreneurs and franchise owners, you'll want to tune in. If you're looking to create a rock-solid business, sick of being stuck on the plateau, and ready to kick it up more than just a notch, you're in the right place. I'm your host, Sharon Galuzzo, and I believe in unleashing your full potential to create resilient, successful businesses that in turn make significant positive impacts in our world. Welcome to the Profit Connections Podcast. Welcome to the Profit Connections Podcast. I'm so glad that you're here. And today we have a very special guest. And I know that you are going to just love everything that she has to say. And it's super, super, super important for business owners to understand these changes. And so I've brought Karen here because she has the latest information and I want everyone to know about it. So my guest today is Karen Grill. Hello, Karen.
Hi, it's so great to be here.
I'm going to read her bio for you just so we can get started. Karen Grill is a business coach and email strategist specializing in email authentication and deliverability. With over 15 years of experience helping small business owners build profitable, sustainable systems, she now focuses on making sure their emails reach the inbox, not the spam folder. Yes, hallelujah. Thank you for being here, Karen. First of all, tell us about these changes that have come about. What's going on? We're in July of 2025. So talk to us about what's new.
Yeah, so you know, when these changes came in October 2023, Gmail, Yahoo, Microsoft, all of them started talking. They want to make email a better experience for their end users. So people who use Gmail and Yahoo, they want to reduce spam. And I think we can all get behind that, right? Nobody wants to receive spam. Yeah. But what they did is they said that now as business owners to send marketing emails, we have to do some additional steps. And I feel like the rollout wasn't very good. Most people didn't realize that starting in February 2024, these regulations started, and then June, another one started. So I think they didn't get the word out to small business owners because so many of the people I work with didn't know about these changes. And so—
Not to interrupt, you said this happened in 2023, and there are still people in 2025 who don't know about them.
Yeah, they started talking about it in 2023. They didn't have things start until February 2024, but it's been over a year and people still don't know. And so that's why I feel really bad, because people just don't know what they don't know. And so they can't implement these things. And actually, they're being harmed, right? If you use email as a huge asset in your business and you don't know about this, you could be getting penalized and your emails won't reach your end users.
And how, like, on the business owner side, can we even tell that it's happening?
So there are some clues. So first of all, it's always important to start first, I think, with your email service provider. Now, they can't give you all the information, but they typically tell you about email authentication. So there are three new records we have to put into our email, and those are the SPF, DKIM, and DMARC. And I don't want you to worry about all the terms, but what you need to know is these are all designed to help make it sure that people can't spoof our emails, right? We don't want other people taking over our emails and pretending to send on our behalf, so we don't want that. And they're also used to show that we own this domain and we allow, let's say you use MailChimp to send on your behalf. So that's all it's really doing, is letting these end users know, I'm a real person, this is my real business, I've done all the things that I need to do to ensure that I'm a real user as opposed to a spammer.
And so let me ask you this question. Like, say I use MailChimp. Doesn't MailChimp, like, isn't that the protection that we need? Doesn't that say that we're a real business and we're doing real things?
No. So one of the changes they made is you can no longer use kind of those email service providers on their behalf. Like in the past, you could maybe even use like a gmail.com to send marketing emails. But that was the changes. We don't control gmail.com, the domain, right? So there's no way we can add any protections or make any changes. So they want domain-based emails. So it's KarenGrill.com, JarenGaluza.com, right? Those are the domains we can control. And so you need to use that domain-based email, even though you're using MailChimp.
So we use an email service provider that no longer has protection for us. We have to then put it, when you say on your domain, so that is the website, the URL that the email is sending from, correct?
Right. It's not really the website, but you know, when you buy your domain, you bought it from some registrar. So there are certain records there. They're called DNS records, domain name servers. So that's where we actually have to put these new records. So it's the same. So if you have a problem with your website, that can affect your email deliverability. If you have problems with your email deliverability on that domain, it can affect your website, right? So it's all connected based on that domain name. So we have to be really careful both with website and email.
Right. So if your URL is living on a platform like HostGator or some other hosting site, that's where these certificates need to be, correct?
So there's three places that most of these DNS records are. So they can be where you purchased, like you said, if you bought your domain, I don't know, GoDaddy or whoever you buy your domain from. They can be at your host, or they can be a third party if you use Cloudflare or something. So those are the three places to look for those DNS records. And that's where you'd update those three records that I talked about.
Awesome. And so whenever we're okay, so let me just take a step back. We're gonna go really deep into the nitty-gritty ugly stuff, just to let you know that it exists. And also to let you know, on top of that, you don't have to do it yourself. People like Karen, Karen's an expert. This is why I brought her here, because she knows all of these things that make my head not explode, but really like throb. And it's just like, oh, it's too much. It's too many details. This is why I brought Karen in. I want you to understand, as a business owner, where are the roadblocks that can keep you from reaching your customers and give you some assurances that you don't have to figure it out all by yourself. So, to continue our conversation, so we have these certificates that need to be updated. How difficult is that? I mean, is it really like, do we have to like fill out a lot of forms? Is it really overwhelming? Like, how does that whole process go?
Right. So your DNS records, you have to add records now. And this is why you have to start first with your email service provider. They will give you what you need to add there, but you just have to know where your DNS records are. So a lot of people don't even know where those are. So that's the first step. Go find where your DNS records live so that you know where you can update them. Now, some of these email service providers have even done kind of tools and they will automatically do it for you, which is even better. So you can go to your email service provider, see what they say about email authentication, and they will help you with the SPF, the DKIM, and the DMARC records. Now, I will say, as a caveat, your email service provider is one place where you might send emails, but you might have a CRM. You might have a course platform. You might have a membership platform. You might send emails from there. And so you will need to see if you need to do something for those platforms as well. So typically, what I say is make a list of all the platforms that you use that maybe you send emails from, and then go and see what they say about email authentication. So that the SPF record, for instance, is the record that says, I allow MailChimp or Kajabi or whoever to send emails on my behalf. So you have to have the full list. If you don't have everyone listed there, you can be looked at as spam. So that's why it's important. List all the programs you use, go check out what they say about email authentication, and then do what they say.
Awesome. So the first most important part is we want our emails to get to our customers. So we need to figure out if all of our ducks are in a row and all these certificates have been filed and all of that's in place. Now, let's just say we have all of those things in place. Are there still other roadblocks that might keep our emails from getting into the inbox and not the spam box?
Yes, there's still several things. So one of the things I think we have to rethink as business owners is really our email marketing strategy. So in the past, you know, especially before all these changes, you could send an email to your whole list every week, no problem. You know, if people didn't open it, that was fine. Maybe your open rate wasn't great, but you didn't get penalized. Now the problem is if you send emails to people who don't want them, let's say they don't open them, you're showing Gmail, Yahoo, Microsoft, all the people that you're sending unwanted email to people. And so you can start to get penalized, right? And so we can't just send kind of broadcast emails all the time to everyone we want. We have to rethink our strategy. And I think one of the things to think about are maybe the different segments in your audience, right? You always want to know.
Talk about, I mean, I want you to break down segments before we even go further, because not everyone understands what you mean by segments, and somebody might think they know what you mean. So break that down for us a little bit. Segments, what does it mean? What does it look like? And how do we utilize that within our in our back offices?
So, you know, in segments, I'm just saying to kind of break down your audience. Each email service provider calls it something different, unfortunately. So they'll say segments or tags or groups. It's really just thinking about your audience. And so, you know, maybe they came in through one certain lead magnet, right? And so, you know, they're interested in topic A, right? So you don't want to send them emails about topic B because they might not open them. And it's more likely that they might mark you as spam, which we'll talk about in a minute. So we have to rethink our audiences, right? And we want to see, okay, what are their interests? And you'll have probably received emails where it'll say, if you want to learn more about topic A, click here. If you want to learn about topic B, click here. They kind of survey their audience. And you might think, oh, that's great. They want to know what we like, but they're also trying to figure out what types of emails you want. So they're not sending you unwanted ones, right?
That is brilliant. That is brilliant that you send, if you send out an email to your audience and ask them on a survey, what kinds of things that they want to receive, those will be the ones that are more likely to open and not mark as spam and not feel like they're, you know, you're just emailing them all the time about things they're not interested in. So segmenting your audience or putting in tags or groups is identifying what your audience is interested in or how they came to you or somehow how you communicate with them, you know, what kind of what they want. Mm-hmm. And so utilizing something like a survey will enable you to actually go in and segment your audience so that when you send out an email about a sale, they want to hear about that, whereas they maybe don't want to hear about some educational things or vice versa. Mm-hmm. So by polling your audience, by asking them exactly what they want, you can actually customize the customer experience. And I think that is where they're trying to go. They want these, all of these Gmail and Yahoo and all these places, they don't want you sending things to people who don't want what you're selling or what you're saying or what email you're sending. Mm-hmm. So we want to find out what do they want, what emails are they most likely to open, and then only send them those.
Yes, exactly.
So now we've got we've taken care of certificates, we've segmented our audience, and on segmenting that audience and creating that experience, about how long does that take? Is that very overwhelming?
I don't think so. I mean, we're lucky that we have these email service providers who've kind of thought of that. They have a lot of tools for us to use. So again, all of them work, right? So there's not one platform that doesn't do something like this. You just have to figure out what your platform calls it and how they do it, but all of them do it. So I definitely recommend, you know, it can just even be a link in there. Say, if you want to hear more about this, click on this. We're trying to get reactions from them. And as you know, if people click in our email, that's a good signal for Gmail, Yahoo, and Microsoft and everyone else as well. So we're kind of twofold. We're learning more about them, but we're also getting them to click our emails, which is perfect as well.
Right. So yes, learning about them is their customer experience. But as the business owners, what we want to know is what are they going to open? So there is a twofold process yep. to that. Yes, it is. It is a double-sided coin. Is that a double? Is a single-sided double? There's two sides of the same coin. There we go. I'm like, I don't know what a double-sided coin is. Yeah. So that's really, you know, so when you're doing anything in your business, you always want to be of two minds. You want to be thinking about what is the customer experience, what's going on for your customers, and how do you approach everything as a business owner so you can get done what you need to do as a business owner while solving their problem and having them have a good experience. So this is a wonderful conversation about that as well. So now, whenever I love that you talked about that the different platforms already have the tools. So if you go into your platform and you're like, I remember Karen telling me all about this really cool stuff and I don't know how it works for my platform. Let me give you a quick tip. Go to the Google and write or say into the Google, how do I figure out segments on my platform and name your platform. Mm-hmm. And Google will tell you, or whatever platform, whatever search engine you're using, it will give you step by step, or it will link you to your server, your service provider, and it'll tell you the steps from there. So don't feel like you have to remember or know how to do it all. You can ask the search engines and they'll step you through things. That's actually become one of my shortcuts for everything. When I get to the point where I'm like, I can't remember how to do this, I just go in and I say, how do I, and sometimes you have to dig, but usually it comes right up and it's really makes it more user-friendly for platforms who may not be so user-friendly.
And all of those email service providers, they all have knowledge bases of some kind. So if you can't get the exact answer from Google, you can definitely go look at them. They all have tons of information for you.
Yeah. I recommend the other one. Yes, go to the knowledge base. However, sometimes I can't find it in knowledge base because I'm not wording it correctly. Right. So that's why I will use that cheat with asking the search engines what to do. Okay, so now we've taken care of certificates, we've segmented audiences. What's next?
So one of the things that I typically find is that people are reluctant or maybe scared of looking at their email analytics, right? They don't take the time to go look at your analytics. And we need to get more feedback from our audience and then make kind of data-informed decisions around them, right? And so if you're not looking at your email analytics, A, you're not going to know what your audience is really, you know, liking. You know, maybe there's a certain type of email that you send that everybody opens or clicks. Maybe there's some that they don't like as well. That's information we need to use because if we want to keep our open rates high, we want to have click-through rates and conversions in the end, right? We need to make sure that we understand what our audience is really resonating with. So we need to make sure that we're looking at those numbers.
Awesome. So email analytics is, tell us, what is that? What does it look like and where do you find it?
Mm-hmm. So again, it's in your email service provider. Everyone has some kind of dashboard that you can look at. They're all a little different, but they all do the same thing. And again, it's going to show you open rates, click-through rates. There are some things you can find there, and those are the main ones. You know, open rates have changed a little bit over the past because Apple iOS, they mark everything as open, even if people haven't opened it. So if, let's say, your open rate shows on your email service provider 50%, I usually subtract 10%, so it's about 10% lower than probably what's shown. But we can still use it kind of as a baseline over the long term, looking and seeing if there's any blips, right? That's what we're looking for. We're looking for any anomalies that might signal, oh no, something's going wrong, I need to investigate. But when people never look,
yeah,
they're never gonna know.
Let me ask you about open rates. So open rate means that the email went into their inbox or their spam box, either way, and they clicked on it and opened it and assumably read it. Correct? That means they opened it. What if they delete it without opening it?
So again, you know, there's difference. The open rate typically will not show that then, unless it's like the Apple situation I said. Usually, you know, if they haven't actually clicked to open it, it won't count as an open. Now it would be considered kind of delivered, but not opened, right?
Got it. Okay. Two different things. They received it, they just didn't open it. Right. And then click through means what?
So within the email, a lot of times we'll have a link to, I don't know, say your website or maybe to an event. If they click on that link, that's a click-through rate. So you're looking at how many people actually click that link within our email.
So when we're looking at our analytics, we want to look at open rates with a grain of salt on the open rates because we're not exactly sure with those numbers because of the Apple situation. Mm-hmm. What are we looking for and I know this changes, but in general, what is a good open rate? Is it like, you know, 80%? Is it 10%? Like, give us a range of where it looks like you're getting a decent open rate.
Mm-hmm. So I will say they typically say kind of industry standards, you know, 30 to 40% is considered good. Okay. Definitely, I think with these new strategy, you can get much higher. I have like in the 70% range because I'm really in tune with my audience. In terms of click-through rates, it's much lower, right? So typically 1 to 3% is considered good. So use those as guidelines, right?
Excellent. Because sometimes I go in and look at analytics and I'm like, great, here are numbers. What do they mean? So that was, thank you very much for digging into that a little bit with me so that people understand what is an industry standard for those analytics. What other kind of analytics should we be looking at other than open and click-through rates?
Mm-hmm. So there's something that we call reply. So let's say a lot of times in like a PS or something, you might say, hey, hit reply and let me know what you're thinking or whatever you were talking about. So that typically is not captured in our email service provider. So that's something that we would have to kind of track ourselves. But replies are great for us because typically I will get emails and say, oh, I totally agree with this, Karen. It totally resonated with me. I have these problems. So you get so much information that you can use. It's information we can actually have a conversation with those people. And I think that's another kind of mindset shift about our email. Before it was kind of broadcast, we just kind of talked to everybody. Now we want to start building relationships and having conversations. And we can do that by saying hit reply. And when they do, they reply to your email and tell you about something. That's gold, right? That's, I think, rates really high on the scale. We're talking open rates and then click the rates and then reply rates. So it's definitely something you can keep track of yourself. They're not able to do that in the email service provider.
Talk a little bit about, it was very interesting what you said is you are very in touch with your audience. So talk a little bit about, if you don't mind, what kinds of things do you talk to about your audience and to your audience? And what kind of, like, tell us a little bit about what your emails kind of look like in general.
So because I have my segments, my emails are different, right? Like I don't have one email that I send. So I talk a lot about email as we're talking about here, but I also talk about funnels. I've often also talked about offers. And so I know what my audience likes to hear from me. And so I really tailor my messages to them. So I'll only send, you know, email people about my email. I'll only send funnels about my funnel people. And so, you know, I do a variety of things. A lot of it is educational, but I also do kind of storytelling, you know, sharing maybe kind of parts of my life, but how that relates to my business. Right. I get a lot of responses to those kinds of stories. So I definitely recommend, you know, testing it with your audience. Every audience is different. We all have different collections of audience, whether it's on social media or email. And that's why you need to listen to your audience and really try to figure out what do they really want to hear from me? What do they respond to? What types of emails? And we can only do that by testing and looking, like I said, at our analytics to make sure we're seeing, oh my gosh, this email got a huge open rate. There's something that I did in that email. And then we have to kind of dissect. Was it the subject line? Was it the topic? You know, did I have something that that I had them click on? You know, really figure out what's working so that you can do more of that as opposed to the things that they didn't like. So that's what I really tried to kind of cultivate with my audience.
That's a really good point. Talking about like I've seen more of a move in emails towards, hey, telling a little bit of story about something that happened in my life or making it a little bit more personal about me personally. I think sometimes even if you have a bigger business and it's not, you know, like you're not a coach or you're not somebody like you're not the face of the business, even in a broader business, in a franchise, in a regular business, you could still tell a personal story and you don't have to bare your soul. It can be like, I went strawberry picking with my family this weekend and this conversation came up or this occurred to me or I stepped on a strawberry and it reminded me of that. That way it gives them a little bit of a more of a connection to you and the business as a human experience, as opposed to just being that entity.
I think there's been a shift from like creating content to like collecting or cultivating content just from our lives or even our business experiences. People really connect with other people. And so when we start to be able to kind of weave that in to our emails, as opposed to just buy this, 20% off, you know, that just doesn't work. Right. So really trying to draw people in so they get invested in the business and your story that they want to read more. And the more they read, more likely than they are to eventually maybe hire us or buy our product or service.
That's an excellent point. Yeah. And with regard to the email, whenever we're doing something like, I know some people are, we go to extremes, right? Oh, I'm just going to tell stories and I'm not going to make any offers, or I'm just going to do this. And how do you balance that out and make it a customer journey as opposed to a one-note experience?
And so this is kind of getting back to understanding your audience, because instead of just, like I said, sending one-off emails, just kind of broadcast to them, we want to think I call them persuasion arcs. So we want to have kind of maybe a series of emails that we're kind of leading them down the path that we want them to go. And not everyone will go with us, but many people will. And so we want to make sure that, you know, whether there's some stories, but we also want to educate, we want to give them value, but kind of draw them in and have them go along the path. And maybe it's, in the end, it's some product or service, right, that we want them to offer. So we can't just think of kind of individual emails. We want to think of several emails together so that they can see a pattern. They can follow along where we want them to go.
That's what an excellent point, because I think a lot of times it's a to-do list, checklist, just let me get this done. So actually putting some thought into the process, into the journey that they're going on, is a really excellent point. And I think that's something else that's changed about email. So thank you for that tip. That's amazing. That's gold. So make sure you make note of this, because that was a gold tip right there. Talk for a second before we move beyond email. Talk to me a little bit about how AI how is it good and bad whenever we're creating an email journey for our customers?
So I definitely think AI can be a really useful tool. I think, and it can help you like brainstorm. I think that's a really good way to use it. Even maybe edit some of your things, or maybe give you options for your subject lines. But I don't recommend it writing for you unless you spend a ton of time to really train it. So it knows your voice, it knows your brand, it knows how you think, all of those things. Because otherwise, I mean, we've probably all seen it. We've all received probably AI emails. We see them in comments on social media. It's just kind of obvious, right? And if you're really trying to connect with your audience, they don't want to connect with the AI, right? So I think the impetus from our stories, the way we tell them, kind of our own voice, I think should really come to us. But I do think we can help say, hey, I want, you know, to take my audience from here to here. You know, what's kind of a journey, a path that we could bring them on? Like, help them do that. You can say, I have these ideas. What do you think are the most, you know, beneficial ideas for my audience? Like, you can help, it can help analyze and tell you maybe what the best direction to go in. But I really think that if we want to create these connections and relationships, it has to be from us as the business owners.
That's awesome. I love that. Thank you for that tip. And my daughter she's so funny. Every email that she writes, she runs it through AI to say, make sure it sounds professional. It doesn't sound passive aggressive, whatever. She puts all these things around it and it rewrites it. It takes her words and rewrites it so that it fits into those things. And AI can do all kinds of things. If you wanted to add like NLP languaging, if you wanted to add any kind of like persuasion, or you wanted to make it more fun or more, it will help you retool your stuff so that it sounds more however you want it. So that's a really good point. I use it a lot for brainstorming. I don't always put it back in to have it, you know, check for those things. That's a really good point to use. And that's a really good way to use AI. And I think it's really important not to delegate all of your thought process and all of your emails to AI exclusively. Great point, Karen. It's a tool to help enhance. However, you get something and you're like, this is AI. Like, I have somebody who uses an AI on a social media. And at first I started responding and I'm like, such a weirdly worded question, but okay. And then after like the third time I was like, oh, this is an AI. So now I ignore it. So that's, you know, that's the good and bad of the AI. It can help us with workflows. However, you still need to have the human oversight and looking at it and making sure that it is what you want it to be.
Yeah, I think it's good for brainstorming, kind of analyzing and polishing, but not creating. Like, we need to be the creators.
Love it. Awesome. So Karen, talk to us about other things beyond email that we need to be looking at in our business.
Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, I'm kind of email centric. I mean, email is kind of the core of my business and other things flow from there. But I do think that, as I said, with our domain name, we have to protect that because it's our sender reputation. It's our website. If you're going to show up on searches, you need to have a good website reputation, right? So we really need to think differently about how we do things, like email and our domain and our website aren't separate entities, right? They're all kind of the same. So I do think we have to really work to protect those things. And that means we need to be, you know, looking at our data and our analytics and making sure our website's good, our email's good. Phew, okay, we're good. But I think it's really important to like schedule one time each month just to go check to make sure things are working smoothly on both of those things so that we can make sure that we're able to reach our audience, whether it's the website or the email.
And that's a really good point about making sure that you're checking in monthly. I think gone are the days of set it and forget it. That's kind of my go-to. And I'm learning that I have to unlearn that now because that's not the way technology is working on any level. It's not set it and forget it anymore. So having a time that you go once a month and check everything and see how everything is going is so critical, because if there's something wrong and you don't discover it for 3 or 6 or 8 months, that is 3 or 6 or 8 months worth of business that you have lost out on because you don't have things set properly so that your tools and your processes and your systems are giving you the deliverables that you have set them up to give you.
Yeah. And, you know, with email, while they haven't explicitly explained how they penalize us, the one hint they gave us is, so let's say at first you have something wrong with your records that we talked about. Mm-hmm. They said, well, first we'll penalize 5% of your list, then 10%, then 15%. So it's a slow kind of penalizing. And the problem is it doesn't show up really dramatically in your analytics, like in a way, like 100%, because you'd see a huge drop off. No one's opening, no one's clicking. You'd see that. Right. But when it's just like slow penalizing, it's really hard to see. only if you're looking at your analytics, you know, all the time, would you actually kind of start to see this drift and you're like, huh. And I can tell you, people have waited a long time to actually come to me and get help, but it can take then, you know, 3 to 6 months to repair their sender reputation and a lot of money to do that. So, so much better if you're looking at it all the time so you can nip it in the bud and stop anything, stop emailing. So that's the one thing. If you see something wrong, stop emailing. Don't email until you figure out what the problem is. Because if you keep emailing, they're going to keep thinking, wow, she keeps sending to these people who don't want it, and they keep penalizing more and more and more. So anytime you see a problem, I would stop emailing for them. Even if you have it scheduled on or something, I would stop that scheduled email going out and just say, hey, let's take a look at my analytics, try to figure out what's happening. You know, if you get a spam complaint, the spam threshold now is 0.3%. So that's so low. If you get like one spam complaint, that can actually ruin your whole sender reputation. So that's why it's so important to schedule that time every month to go look at your analytics to make sure you know, kind of, you get a sense of your email, like where is the baseline for you? What's typical open rates? What's typical click-through rates? You know that. So if there's something that's different this time, you know that, hey, wait a second, I think there might be something going wrong.
And if you've listened to this conversation and you're feeling significantly overwhelmed at all of this, first of all, like I said at the beginning, there's help. Karen is amazing. Get in touch with her, have a conversation. She is no pressure. She's really amazing. Mm-hmm. And she'll be honest with you about what's going on. Yep. And give yourself a little bit of patience and grace. However, if this is one of the main ways that you communicate with your clients, and it should be, then this is something critical that you need to have in place, and you need to figure out what's working, what's not working. Am I setting myself up for failure? Am I being shadow banned? I just used that word for what she said before, where they're kind of cutting off your email deliverability a little bit at a time. That's probably not what it means. However, if this is a really critical thing to be working on in your business. So let's make sure that it's healthy. Let's make sure that you have all the things in place that you need to have in place. So make sure that that is something that you make a priority, and you make a priority of it at least once a month.
Mm-hmm. And you know, social media, a lot of people use it and it's great, but we actually don't own it. We don't really control it. Email is the only thing that we can really control. So even if you use social media, I would be pushing people to my email list because you have the most control over it. Now, I know these new changes maybe seem overwhelming, but if you're a business owner, it's something that we actually have to prioritize for our business. If we earn money from our email, if this is a way we connect with our audience, then we actually need to make this a priority and really understand what we need to know and get help when we don't.
Excellent. Karen, this has been so enlightening, a little bit overwhelming. There's so much to know. And with anything technology, it changes all the time. And I had another question that I wanted to ask you really quickly. What is there anything special about having gmail.com accounts with regard to deliverability or sendability?
So, you know, really, as business owners, we're not supposed to use gmail.com accounts. Those are personal email accounts. And so typically they won't allow you to send that. You'll see a lot of people try to send, you know, many emails, one to many, and they don't allow that. They kind of cut that off. So definitely if you're sending one to many, you want to do that. Now, Google Workspace is kind of the business way of using kind of Google's, but typically you have your own domain anyways with that, okay? But that's more like one-to-one kind of client communications as opposed to marketing where you're sending one to many. So definitely, you know, have that domain-based email. Again, we can control it. We can make sure it has a good sender reputation by doing some of the things we talked about today. So you want the most control. Gmail.com is really for personal.
Awesome. Thank you for, I meant to ask that earlier and I forgot till just now. So Karen, I understand that you have a gift for our listeners, so I would love to hear about that.
Yeah, so I know we talked about a lot of things today, threw a lot of terms out. So I have something, it's kind of email authentication 101. It's a quick fix inbox visibility guide. It'll walk you through everything we talked about today, what you need to be looking for. It's a checklist for you too, so you know if you've done everything, just to kind of get you started to make sure you can start to take control over your own email deliverability.
That is an amazing gift. And I love that it starts at like an easy level. 101, yes. Walk us through what we need to do initially. And that's an amazing gift. Thank you so much for that. And what we're going to do is we are going to put a link to Karen's gift in our portal, which is profitconnectors.club. That's Profit Connectors, because you're the connectors to your profit. Profitconnectors.club. It's free to get in there, go in, and we will have Karen's bio, her contact information, and her free gift for you inside our community, and allow you to connect with Karen that way. It's an easy way to find everything on all of our episodes. We do publish all of our episodes on there, as well as everyone's bio, gifts, all the stuff that we've had for the entire podcast. So you go in there, you can find Karen's gift and other gifts as well. So we encourage you to do that. I want to thank you, Karen, so much for your time today. And your information is so important and a little overwhelming, if I'm honest. However, it's so critical because we use email to have that client experience, especially there's a lot of online businesses that don't ever even see their people in person. So that is kind of a lifeline for us. So thank you so much for your time and the critical information.
Well, thank you for having me. And I just hope that everyone can get their emails to land in the inbox.
Yay. Awesome. So thank you everyone for being here. I encourage you to keep showing up. Your future self will thank you. And remember, it's your business and your impact. Go make it count. Thanks for joining us for this Profit Connections podcast. Hey, Profit Connectors, that's it for another Profit Connections podcast. Thank you for joining us. If you're ready to make moves and connections that take your business to the next level, want to get to know us and our speakers better and get your gifts and resources, head over to the website profitconnectors.club. That's profitconnectors.club, and get your goodies right now.